Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code DKHOOPS. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code DKHOOPS, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy. Yeah. Right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The VC Show is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. Download it, but you must be 21 or older.
The VC Show, let's go, doing the part with Roz. We got the sports on deck for our audience. Whether it's big news, hot topics, updates, straight facts, storytelling, breakdowns, or special guests. VC Show, let's go, it's time to turn it out. The VC Show, let's go.
Welcome to the VC Show, presented by Caesars Sportsbook on Omaha Audio. I'm Vince Carter, alongside Roz Gordon. What a Roz. It's great to be back with you. You know, you're a busy lady, so I tried to hold it down for you. But you know what? I can admit it now. Glad to see you. Glad to see you. There you go.
You're happy. Sorry, what was that? I'm sorry, what?
Glad to have you back. It's good to see you.
You missed me?
We missed you. Yes, I missed you. There you go. You got it.
Well, I'm so happy to be back. I have absolutely missed the VC Show. I've missed you. I've missed our team. I've missed everybody watching. So glad to be back. And now that I'm back, I have something I want to ask you about.
What's going on? Yes, I've been busy.
No.
No, that's not it.
No. Internet's talking. The internet's been talking, Vince, about you. A quote from the great Allen Iverson popped up about you on the internet, and he said that you're a top five dancer in the world. That came from Allen Iverson. In fact, he doubled down on it when he was questioned again. He said, he's like super incredible. I don't know if too many people know it, but the guys and the females that know Vince, that know him personally, they know he's like a top five dancer in the world. Dude, any dance in any style, he can do it. Whatever the young kids can do, whatever the fat is, Vince can do it.
And then I don't know where he got this from.
They got to get you on TikTok. So that's something that happened. I want the truth, hold Vince. Up.
He said something about TikTok. So this is him doubling back like recently.
Yep, because it was TikTok, right?
Yeah, you said TikTok. That's what I'm saying. Wait, oh man.
Yeah.
I don't know where I'd have to. I haven't talked to AI in a while, and I gotta ask him. Like, refresh my memory. Like, where do you recall any of this? Like, because I know we played together in Puerto Rico for one of the Olympic qualifier teams, but.
I don't recall. I gotta ask some questions.
Why would Allen Iverson go on an interview and make up this story about you being a great dancer?
I don't know. But I don't know. Why would he make that up?
Something is not adding up.
We both agree on that. Something is not adding up. I don't know what it is, but bro, what? Oh my gosh. I got to get a hold of him ASAP.
He went on to say.
Oh, he said more.
Just a great talent, a great gift to the world, a blessing to the fans. Does anything stick out that he can dance his tail off? And that was after you had retired. That's him reminiscing on you. After you retired, after 22 years in the league, Allen Iverson was asked about Vince Carter. And his main memory was that you're a terrific, incredible, generational dancer. And now here you are denying it.
All 100. I don't, man.
Unbelievable. We don't have to have Allen Iverson on the show. Can we reach out to Allen?
Absolutely.
I can't believe that you're just gonna dead this like that. So it's over. You don't have anything to say about these comments?
I have zero to say because I have questions that I need answered to from that man. Because I don't know what he's talking about.
Okay.
That's for real.
What other questions do you have for Allen Iverson?
The question is where are you getting this information from? Where did you see this?
Okay,
let's talk about Sway.
We could talk basketball if you wanted, but before we move on to current topics in the NBA, because that was a quote that has resurfaced according to our wonderful production team here at the VC show.
I'm so
the people want to know though, Vince, can you dance?
I could dance a little bit. Yes. At one point I was in the band. I used to choreograph band dances back in the day. So yes, I don't have two left feet. Now today's dances, it's possible. I don't attempt them often. I don't put the time into them now. You know, you already know what takes up my time. So I'm probably behind on some dances now. Which saying that now, I sound old, but that's okay.
Do you have any other unknown skills that the world needs to know about? Can you cook? Music. Can you cook?
Yeah, I'm okay. I don't do it often.
I think you're a humble Renaissance man, Vince, and I don't even know why you're being so humble about
it. So I will say this. I will say this to that, not the cooking thing. Just my mother a long time ago as a high school kid, she said, you know, you need to begin to learn a little bit about a lot of things. And I took that to heart, and it puts you into a lot of circles, in my opinion, by just knowing a little bit about a lot of things, and you're able to have conversations with all types of people. And it was something I didn't really understand. I was like, okay, whatever. And as I started to get older, as basketball started to take me different places and started to meet people, appearances, I started doing appearances that, or speaking engagements, that's to say, to groups that didn't have anything to do with basketball. And at first, I used to have anxiety and was kind of didn't know what to say, you know, or how to be, you know. It was just all about, you know, basketball conversations. And as I began to kind of open my mind a little bit and start to learn a little bit about a lot of things, I mean, you know, when you're in these different situations, and Roz, you're in a lot of different situations like that and meeting different people, if you can have or know a little bit or just have a conversation about what someone else does, what they do, that, I mean, you know, that just opens up so many avenues for you. And I've learned that, just, you know, whatever it may be, I there's a lot of things, like cooking, like, I mean, there's so many things out there that I don't know much about, but
like dancing,
I know about dancing. I do. I know about it.
I don't know what you're covering up, but I think Allen Iverson. I don't know what you're covering up, but I will get to the bottom of this. This is something. Yeah. I think we have Allen on the show. I feel like you are giving me some roundabout circle answer right now to get around whatever Allen Iverson was talking about. There was an off season trip somewhere, and you was in a beach. No,
I've never dancing. There's only two times in my life that I can recall hanging with Allen Iverson.
And, oh, okay.
You know, and it was both. Well, no, one was in a casino. I saw him once, and then during our time when we played together, and then some All Star games too. So, but I have to ask. I gotta ask, man.
Okay, I'll take you off the hot seat. Let's move along.
I am so confused.
Let me tell you, I wasn't a math major, but none of this is adding up. All right. Let's take it to the numbers that are making sense. Your boy in Orlando, Paolo Banchero, like he's been doing his thing. And first of all, before we even get, you made your Orlando Magic broadcasting.
Yeah, thank you. It was a cool opportunity. As you know, I call games for the Atlanta Hawks, and PR reached out to me like, "Hey, would you be willing?" And, me, I'm like, "Yeah, sure." Whether I can or can't, I say yes. What a former team that I played for, and it was great to be back. Obviously, I'm from Florida, so I got to some of the staff. Security, still work there. So just walking in to that arena was a pretty cool feeling. And, we reminisced a little bit, but, it was cool. It was cool. It just adds on to all of the other stuff that I'm doing. I'm starting to get kind of busy like you now.
Yeah, you don't even want to be busy like me. You've worked too hard your whole life to be at this glorious stage of your retired career and hustling like I am. This is your time to be in the sunset, just popping on shows.
I'm not ready for that.
No, golfing. I think you are living a good retired life, man. Going to your kids' games, like things like that. I'm out here. I'm doing this.
And that's what I'm saying. I'm doing that in between that.
This isn't a life, Vince. You think this is fun? I didn't say that. You think I'm having a good time?
Yes, you are.
No, I am.
But no, I'll tell you, I travel as much as playing. And I was like, dang, I should have just kept playing. I just make it work. And I think I'm retired. But not completely or fully retired as far as just like kicking my feet up. Like I just can't. I'm not at the age where I can see myself just kicking my feet up, just vacation after vacation. I don't know. I still got that hustler, like go get it mentality, man. So I still got goals, man. I still want to be. I'm gonna throw it out there. I've said it before, but I still want to be a part of an ownership group where I can help a team. So I just. I'm doing my work now as far as just, calling games, being around and doing this. And then hopefully it leads me to that one day. So, the Orlando Magic has given me another opportunity.
I was joking. It's the end of the day. I think I'm delirious. But I think if there's anybody who, you want affiliated with an organization or a team or an ownership group, we can't speak highly enough about you. So the fact that you put the work in, there's a lot of people that would have pulled up like, hey, I'm Vince. But the fact that you're like, hey, I'm willing to put in work at every chapter, in every new role in my life,
yeah,
it really speaks a lot of volumes, and I'm certain it will pay off.
We hope so.
No, all that. Come on, man. Hard work pays off.
For sure.
So tell me about Paolo. What you think about him? Real deal?
I think he's the real deal. I like his game, and he's going to continue to mature. But you're talking about a rookie stepping into this NBA game. You saw what he did game one where, he had to, lay my guy Corey Joseph down. But let's just say he's fearless. And they're putting the ball in his hands. And we're not talking about a point guard here. We're talking about a small four, power four type player. That is making moves. He's making waves, and he's been out lately, and their team is still playing well. To have a bunch of young guys, and they just play hard. Coach Jamal Mosley has those guys playing hard. So look out for that team. I know everybody like, what, the Magic? Cool. Yeah, you're right. It's just Magic, and they're irrelevant to a lot of us, but they have a lot of young talent. When it clicks, it's going to click. And just imagine, the game hasn't slowed down for him yet. Like, he's coming in as a rookie, just filling out. Like, as he slows down, oh, man.
Yeah. I mean, I think he looks pretty confident and poised even as a rookie. Yeah. With all
he is that.
Eyeballs on him and to be, you know, at his size, to be in that many playmaking positions on the court.
And the pressure of being the number one pick doesn't seem to faze him.
Yeah. What's the pressure that comes with being a top 10 pick?
Being a top 10 player immediately. Yeah. That's I think that's the number one pressure, is you know, you're expected to be good. You're expected to make a difference. And he's doing that. But, you know, we've seen number one picks year after year that takes some time. And it's just different for different players. And he's in a position where he can be featured, where he can have the ball, where he can make mistakes, but still have the opportunity to grow. And they're featuring and highlighting his talents, and then everything else will come around. Because I think he's a great player, and he's going to still, you know, he's going to continue to evolve as a facilitator, being that he has the ball a lot. I look at him being like a LeBron as far as having the ball at that size, making plays for everyone and himself. So what's going to come with that is that responsibility of being a facilitator, because he can score a lot of points, but your team's not going to win. And once he kind of realized that, you know how the phase works, then, you know, he'll continue to climb to that next tier.
You know, you talk about handling pressure, and there's like good pressure and there's like good anxiety sometimes, or good anxiousness that might come, you know, with pulling up to and handling the pressure of your job. You know, for me, even as a broadcaster and as a player, as a basketball player, I was nervous before every game. And as a broadcaster, I have a lot of nervous energy as a person. I do. One of the things that I've tried to do is, one, a lot of positive self-talk, a lot of positive visualization, a lot of preparation gives me a lot of confidence. Preparation, knowing I came in prepared. Routines, I found as an athlete, help me to come into the game more settled. And I do that even as a broadcaster. I do a lot of the same stuff before every game. You know, I really, really try to lock in on moments, especially on the sideline reporter role, where I've got like 30 seconds to make impact, and you really got to focus, because like it's coming at you. You have no idea what's coming sometimes. You got to make sure you're not distracted. And like,
and I want to give you, before you go any further, I want to give you your kudos to that. Like, we've seen moments where you've been able to adapt to unknown situations, and it was just dope because it was seamless, and you didn't look rattled at all, and you handle it with grace and dignity, and like, I got this, like, oh shoot, okay, all right, boom, all right. Because and I think it helps that you played the game, and you know, you know what you saw. Mm-hmm. You can think quickly enough to where it's like, all right, cool, Drew Holiday, all right, well, boom. I can ask you a question just to get started, to give you time to think, and you can just tell you did a great job.
Thank you, Vince. Thank you so much. You're such a fabulous teammate. Thank you. Yeah. And that does mean a lot to be seen. Sometimes the sideline role can feel, you know, so I've heard somebody use the word thankless. You know, you're just hustling so much from one thing to the next, but, yeah, I mean, those are like, I very much use basketball tools to help me get through my game days as a reporter now. I'm curious, like, were you ever nervous before games, or no, you just pulled up?
I had nerves. But as I got to know how to handle them, I had my fixes for them. So sometimes for games, even year 20, 21, 22, I was like, I don't know, just hype. I was just in that mood, like going crazy. So I had music that I would listen to kind of just mellow me out. Not just mellow me out where I got to fire myself up, but just even keel, and vice versa. When I needed to kind of find that energy, particularly year 19, 20, 21, 22, find that energy to be ready to go. Because I mean, for me, I felt like I had a responsibility regardless of whether I had a built-in excuse. You know, it's easy to say, oh, he's 40-something. You know, it's understandable. I didn't see it that way. I consider myself a basketball player, and I had to be ready to go like any other player. So I had music for the moment and for the mood and where I needed to be. So, yeah, I mean, I had nervous energy, and I had – sometimes I felt like I was I wasn't ready to play mentally. So I found you know, music or motivation, you know, like you said, some of those self-talk sometimes, like, bro, like, nah, you can't do this. You can't do this. Like, you know, what are they, you know what they're going to say if – you play your 8 minutes or your 12 minutes or your 15 minutes, whatever it was, if you don't come ready to go. Things like that. So, yeah, for sure.
What kind of music did you play to get yourself in the right zone for a game?
It, like I said, it depended on the moment. I mean, I was it was a lot of throwback for me, a lot of throwback music that I enjoyed that, you know, sometimes was No Limit. You know, it just, you know, it some upbeat Mystical. I was a big Mystical fan. So,
you know, some of his Mystical.
Come on, man.
Who was it?
Yeah. Right. So like Mystical, you know, was one of my favorites. So he's the one that kind of he and No Limit kind of got me there. You know, old T.I., old Jeezy, you know, stuff like that. Some old Biggie. I mean, I was all over the place.
Gotcha.
Yeah, a couple of songs. Yeah, I mean, you know, some Ross, like those. That was kind of my group there. And when I was overly hyped, I listened to some jazz. Sam Cooke, I was all over Najee. I was all over the place as far as that. You know, so you know, I'm heavy into the band. Obviously, you know, I was in the marching band, so I'll listen to like a lot of marching bands. You know, that kind of just got me. In a different, I don't know, that one's hard to explain. I know people were like, wait, what? But that would kind of, you know, keep me even keel too, because I really enjoy that music as well.
With us talking about mindset, pressure, preparation, how we step into the game, it's a good segue for the just ongoing conversation around the Nets and specifically Ben Simmons. And more recently, Charles Barkley just had, you know, more to say on Ben Simmons. And, you know, to softly paraphrase, you know, he said that he felt Ben needed to work with a sports psychologist, a mental game coach, that he is blocked up, and that he felt Ben, the decision to move Ben to coming off the bench and have him come in as a backup and in a reserve role, he didn't like it. And I think that's tough. You know, I think you've got coach trying to figure out what's the best way to, one, put him in a position
where he's right.
To win.
Right.
And then maybe two, to take a little bit of pressure off of him in the second unit, perhaps feature him differently in the second unit. And to your point, I think, you know, and let's start with, dude, I got to get these wins, you know? So what are
or
your
I'm
thoughts?
Next out the door.
Right. What are your thoughts on the Ben Simmons situation?
It's a tough situation. I will say I'm gonna double back and then work my way forward. I did like Kyrie protecting Ben Simmons coming out. Like, what do you want to do? This guy's been out for a year and a half trying to get basketball. And I would ask that of anyone. Like, you get away from, you know, let's just talk about the game of basketball or, you know, something. It's gonna take you a while to kind of roll yourself back into, you know, into that professional form. And you know, on top of all of the other issues and mental issues he's having from what we've heard, on top of being a point guard, trying to understand how to be the best point guard and get these two superstars and KD and Kyrie the ball and so on and so forth. So, you know, it's one thing having a mental coach and all of these things and visualizing, going through and simulating these situations. It's another thing actually going through it live and feeling comfortable enough to handle those moments or situations that might put him in these hesitant moments or situations. So it's a process. I mean, he's kind of going through it in front of us all. You know, when the everyday person, they take their time off and they go through this behind closed doors, behind the scenes where nobody knows and nobody really can't comment on his every move. So it's just a different situation. Everybody's going to have their opinion. You know, now to what Barkley said, like, I hear him, but, you know, it's
to
a, it's
part?
It's a,
Hear him.
I hear what he's saying. Like, he's like, oh, he doesn't like it. He feels like he should play himself. I'm guessing he feels like he should play himself out of this mental block, outside of the mental coach. But so
let's have an
organization.
Like, do you think he should come off the bench?
Yes, I do. And I think that because me personally, I think you're saving him for himself. Now we're able to take a step back, because through all of this stuff that we've been hearing lately, you don't hear much about Ben Simmons and not performing lately. You know, it was in the beginning, the first couple of games, it was like, oh man, what's going on? And then it died away because of, you know, all of the other Kyrie stuff and I think bringing him off the bench, you know, it's like, all right, take your time. Do you think? Because I think they are in his corner, but it's a situation where we're supporting you, but we've just gone through a coaching change and we have this interim coach who's trying to win, and we're trying to continue to have our season, to have a good season, save our season. It's a lot going on at the same time. So I don't think there's a book, there's a coach that you can go and ask these questions. How do I handle this situation? I think they're trying to go through this as they're in the fire. So they're just trying to make the right decision for everyone. You know, because just think about it. If Jock doesn't win, if he's 1-3 or doesn't win a game, what are we saying right now? We got to figure it's time for Jock to go. He's not the one. So
no, I don't think that's going to be. They can't. Just,
no, I'm just saying if they don't win
him to that position, he's got to get the whole season under him. Unless they.
I'm talking about the outsiders, not more so organization. You know, so I just, you know, just get the talk. And now I think they're starting to push the talk out of their locker room. It's more right. Playing basketball now. You know, they kind of can just hoop. And conversations, at, you know, doing shoot around and before the games are about your opponent now, not about, oh, what do you think about what such and such said? You know, yeah. So I think, you know, they're trying to keep as much noise out.
You know, I think Ben is in a situation matters. And I think the Nets are trying to work towards being a healthier organization on a number of levels. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the more you can help Ben just focus on, you know, the game and, you know, I'm reading articles about watching his language, or you watching interviews from Ben talking about taking it a day at a time and one day at a time.
Think about that.
Relearning
now, not only
positions. And I'm like, you know, we just spoke about Paolo Banchero and you compared him to LeBron James. You said there's things you can make that comparison. Just a few years ago, we were talking about Ben.
The same way. Yeah.
And, you know,
and he can be that. He still can be that if he wants
to. In the language that I noticed from Coach Vaughn, though, you know, I'm looking at language. I'm looking at who's telling the story. You know, I keep my media hat on. And I'm noticing Coach Vaughn is resetting expectations. He is taking pressure off of Ben. He is letting go of past notions and understandings of who Ben is in this league. To see, if you were to read a quote that Coach Vaughn used to describe Ben and just read it, and you told somebody, guess who that, and you didn't say the name, you said, guess who this quote is about, you wouldn't know that was about Ben Simmons. You would think it would be some, you know, rotational player working their way up on the roster. They need to see more, not a guy who's making, I think, $170 million or something, you know, and like, you know, the size of these contracts put a lot of pressure too.
It's hard to
hear somebody say, oh, I'm going to take it. I'm just taking it one day at a time, making $170 million.
And the market that he's in doesn't help either. He's in a small market.
In New York. Now, I'm a compassionate person, and I actually have a lot of mental health stuff going on in our family. So there's a lot of compassion and grace I'm able to meet this with. But I understand the business side of this too. And it's like, your contract says you need to be here. And it's putting pressure on the rest of our roster. But I think it's just a matter of time. And to Charles's point about a sports psychologist, I think everybody should be seeing a sports psychologist. All teams.
Do we know that he is or is not already?
I'm sure he is. I mean, he's talked very publicly about his mental health. Why wouldn't he be?
That's what I'm saying. But there's like, you know, he needs to see one. But like, that's what I'm saying. Like, is, you know, do we know that he is or is not already? You know, like, I feel like
I imagine he
it's
is.
Just exactly. That's what I'm saying. I think he is. I'm sure he is. And I think it's just everybody handles it differently. And we look at situations and we look at how we handle those situations and expect that person to handle it like I or we would handle it. And I think sometimes we do that to players, and, you know, we all handle things differently. You know, we can all get thrown in the same situation and handle it differently every time.
I think that every team, and there's a number of teams, if not all, that have a hired sports psychologist on the mm-hmm. team staff. And if they don't, you know, there's someone that they bring in. You know, the last week or two, I've been covering games and going to cities and talking to the players. And it's hard. You know, I have to use social media. I have content to post. I have to keep up with what's going on. But recently, I felt like I needed to take a break. And I know that for the athletes, they're right in the thick of it on so many levels between the things that were happening with Kanye and Kyrie and conversations about anti-Semitism and then Takeoff passing and then this person passing away and then, like, you know, shootings and this. It feels like there's so much stimulation and then also everything has an agenda and so much, like, happening at once. It's a lot. And so, you know, I feel like all these players, I mean, especially on the Nets, when you see how the conversation, and I'll shift this, has moved around Kyrie. At first, you know, it became an issue of Kyrie, is he being stubborn? And now there's a larger feeling that you're seeing a momentum moving around, or let me say that better, because I don't want to say that wrong. Kyrie and anti-Semitism. And the hurtfulness of how you use your platform. And now on the other side, I'm seeing a ripple effect of, especially within the Black community, people feel now rallying around Kyrie and feeling that he's being unjust, the punishment isn't matching the crime, or is he being persecuted in the wrong way? And now more recently, you're seeing, you know, NBPA Players Association representatives like a Jaylen Brown speaking publicly now that he is upset, that now LeBron James has spoken up, talking that the punishment has been excessive. And there's been a lot of support from other celebrities and entertainers. And all I see is, like, man, this has become... It has the potential to be very big. And I'm curious your thoughts on how you've seen, one, the actual actions around the Nets versus the bigger political or agenda or larger conversations as a society around what's going on.
My question was, it is excessive. And why is it so excessive?
That's your stance.
You know, why is this punishment so excessive? Like, I'd like to know why they feel like this. And one of the things I thought, so if we think back, you know, on timelines, it's like, you know, some of the things with Kyrie has put the Nets in situations where they had no power or no control over whatever, outside of saying, please stay away. And now this is a chance for them to kind of gain their power back. So I think it's more over a course, but they're using the now to get everything under control. You said, I think Sean Marks is trying to change the culture on expectations and what they expect from guys. And I was like, maybe that's why. And I'm not sitting here saying by any means that's right, because I think it is excessive. You want an apology. A public apology, you know, Kyrie being Kyrie was giving an apology his way, which wasn't good enough. And that's fair. That's fair to the organization. And, you know, that conversation between Adam Silver and Kyrie should have happened before all of this happened. Now, the organization is allowed to have their own, you know, their own disciplinary actions and do, you know, as they see fit. So I get that part. But it's like, okay, you know, here's what confuses me. Ownership. Commissioner has come out and say, by any, we feel there's, you know, Kyrie is not what we perceived him to be, so on and so forth. So where are we right now? Like, okay. Yeah, so you now know. Yeah. Like, we now know, and you said he's not that, you know, he has zero hate to the Jewish community and all of these things. So let's fix the problem. And so we can move on, because I think this is a strain on everyone. And there, again, here's another situation where organization, league is trying to handle this, but is there a book to go by? Like, you know, we feel like what's right, what's wrong, and we're trying to handle it that way, but it is excessive. It is point blank. I mean, I think you're trying to get him to, you know, to just go on this mission that, you know, I think you handled it the right way. He has to meet with this. But the most important person he needs to meet with first, he needs to handle stuff within himself. Then you have to meet with your ownership. He did that. Ownership said, no, you know what? No, Kyrie is not like that. I can vouch for him on that. Check. Meet with the commissioner of the league. You know what? Kyrie is not like that. Check. Now, within all of these things, now I think you've proven that you're not like that. Now, Kyrie should still be able to play while now meeting with these community figures that they want him to meet with at the same time. You know, but, you know, like I said, they all handle it differently.
Yeah. I think that.
I mean, it's a sticky situation. Like, what do you think?
No, you don't got to walk it back. Like, I think you said
you're. No. What I'm saying is it's a sticky situation.
It's sticky. There were many missed opportunities by multiple parties.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I agree with
that. Kyrie missed a number of opportunities to nip it in the bud. Sorry. Oh, you know, that was wrong. Or I didn't. He eventually got there, but in his hesitation and his slowness to get there, and perhaps his stubbornness to say it the way people needed to hear it or to denounce it, it allowed the situation to become, you know, bigger. It also allowed, while there is a lot of, while it was absolutely reckless to use your platform to put any hurtful to any group information out there, what you'll notice is that these types of conversations now become like filled with agenda. People who don't care about Kyrie, people who don't care about the NBA, people who don't care about Jewish people, or people who don't care about Black people, have now found a way to use this and manipulate it into, you know, something that they can use. And, you know, I think there were missed opportunities by ownership and the Brooklyn Nets. And I think there were missed opportunities by, you know, the NBA to have a conversation before, you know, further putting fire on this and then escalating. Nobody de-escalated. Everybody escalated. And, you know, there's a list out. I actually wonder, how did that list get out there? Who gave that? Whose team did that come from? Because that only made the Nets look crazy and made
that's the, can I say one thing before you go any further? I just want to add to that until you can continue. And you just put it out there. I think the thing that's so damaging is that everything or everyone felt like they had to put it out in the social media, or everything they're feeling in social media, instead of handling it internally.
Yeah, I think there's.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I know Josiah had something.
Correct.
Right, but everybody felt like they had to go to say, like, what they had to say. Like Josiah said, okay, handle it. You're the owner. Go in and pull him aside and say, hey, I didn't like, you know, everything you said on social media, say it behind closed doors, because now everybody's stressed trying to keep media out, but you invite them in by.
Yeah, social. I get what you're saying. And
that's
and
what
I,
I'm saying.
Do you think that the activity by Nets ownership, Josiah on Twitter, was abnormal for an owner?
I thought it was kind of weird. Like he showed his displeasure for me. I mean, it's you see it happen, but I think this is the situation where it's like, nah, not that one. Not that one. Keep that. Handle that, boss man. Handle that internally. To me, that's I felt when I saw it.
In the PR scope of things, Kyrie certainly has been digging himself a hole. There have been a number of actions he's taken that have mm-hmm. been worthy of critique and mm-hmm. got critique. But I don't think that the tables really turned until ownership, you know, Josiah and ownership got really involved vocally. And then we saw a list of demands, and then we saw back and forth. And then it's hard to throw any stones, you know, because people will, it's 2022, you know, people can look up, you know, and see if, do you have a glass house yourself? And, you know, now,
yeah.
And the PR campaign. And then now I'm actually seeing a rally around Kyrie because you're noticing mm-hmm. players starting to shift. Before it was silent. Now players are saying this is excessive. There's reports now that the Players Association may file a grievance for Kyrie, who has apologized, who did offer the money, although it was rejected. He has spoken to all the parties that he had to speak to. It's becoming bigger than Kyrie. It's becoming bigger than the Nets. And I'm sure the NBA would like to end this as soon as possible, because it could get mm-hmm. into something much uglier, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree.
Let's leave it there. It's been good talking with you. I got to catch a flight, hustle. My life just is always on the road. I still haven't packed. You want to talk more? Look at Vince. Vince, always.
I didn't say nothing.
No. What do you want to talk about? Bradley Beal to the Lakers? You got a comment on Bradley Beal to the Lakers? You think it's possible?
Joel Embiid had 59. I know that.
Is he the best player in the world?
I know that.
All right, let's do a Joel Embiid topic.
He's not the best player in the world.
Who's the best player in the world?
He's not the best player in the world. I'm gonna say Giannis, Luka, and then Jason Tatum right now. Those three.
I love
right
that.
Now. Yeah. Those three right now.
Yeah.
Cooking.
Wait. But Joel's not in your list of top players?
I just gave you three. That's it. I just gave you three. You want five? Because when I give you five, you can say, wait, such not in there?
John Morant. All
right. Joel. So we can say, fine.
Give me your top Giannis, three. And that
Luka,
means say it again.
I just gave you those three. I said you can say Giannis, Luka, Jason Tatum, then you throw Ja and then Embiid.
You got five players there, and I said, "Give me three."
That five. Well, I gave you three already. You was like, "Wait."
So your five.
I just gave five players.
So your five are Dylan. No, I'm playing. No, okay. Here you go.
Giannis,
Luka,
Tatum,
Embiid,
Morant,
Ja,
and Morant.
I like that.
Those five right now are. Doing it.
Yeah. Okay. If you had to go down to three, what are your three?
Giannis, Luka, Tatum.
All right.
Those two follow.
You had to go top two, not two. Who's your number one?
Giannis.
Ah! That's it from the VC show. He said it.
Let's go.
Say the word. Let's go. Yo, Vince. You have
go
to
pack.
Basketball.
I didn't pack yet.
All right, I feel bad. I always feel like the adult telling you to turn the lights off and go to bed. Like you wanna talk more.
We can. How you ain't packed yet?
No, go ahead. We can talk about the deal rumors.
No. I don't want to talk.
All right, it was fun to see you.
Always a pleasure. You know how we do. Thank you to everyone for listening. You know, we love obviously having a great conversation to get you guys conversating and talking. VC show, let's go. We out.
Get Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.